from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we'll hear from the candidates seeking the state's chief law enforcement officer job, Attorney General, including San Francisco District Attorney and Democratic candidate Kamala Harris. Republican Steve Cooley declined to participate in the bottom half of the hour. We'll hear from those running on the Libertarian, Peace and Freedom, Green, and American Independent Party tickets. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this hour of Forum, we're going to look at the Attorney General's race and continue our election coverage, the upcoming November 2nd state election, with focus on the race for Attorney General, the office presently held by gubernatorial candidate Jerry Brown. The Attorney General of California's primary duty, according to the state constitution, is to uniformly and adequately enforce the laws of the state. And we're going to meet the third-party candidates in the bottom half of the hour. Steve Cooley, the Republican candidate, was invited to be with us this morning and declined to be here. He recently had a debate with Kamala Harris, who is here with us at University of California, Davis, yesterday. And Kamala Harris is here in studio. And good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Kamala Harris is, of course, San Francisco District Attorney and is running on the Democratic Party ticket. Let's talk about this race. It's become pretty political. I mean, surprise, but more political than you expected.
Yes, to some extent. Perhaps that's naive, but there are so many important issues that are at play right now. We are a state that is a wonderful state, but we have many longstanding issues that really must be addressed, and we need solutions. In many ways, we have a lot of broken systems. And I wish that this election cycle were a series of debates where we could have a conversation, where we could defend a theory or a hypothesis and discuss the issues that are really going to or should be addressed by the next attorney general. But when you run statewide in this, the most populous state in the country, the only way to really talk with people short of doing a series of debates, which I have asked to do, but my opponent has declined, the only way then to talk with everyone about these important issues is through a 30-second commercial, Michael. And the public appetite for that commercial is that it should be 30 seconds long and end with some sort of exclamation point. And I just don't know of any good public policy that can be articulated in 30 seconds and end with an exclamation point. So it's a process. It's a process that can be a bit frustrating. But the reality of it is that I do know, based on the work we have done here, that innovation is more than ever needed in terms of people who hold these offices, and that we should talk about what has been proven to be solutions to longstanding problems, such as the work we have done in my office, which has been to embrace innovation instead of some defensive status quo, which is what I believe my opponent has done. And it is about saying, let's judge our effectiveness not based on some blind adherence to tradition, but instead based on an infusion of metrics into the analysis. Are we actually producing the outcomes we all desire? And if not, let's have the courage to critically examine existing systems and agree that they need to be reformed.
Well, you're pretty opposed to each other. I mean, it's pretty clear-cut choice for many people in terms of and the field poll just shows that it's running really close. I was just thinking, I mean, you're on different sides, obviously, on the death penalty, and I want to get into that with you. You, of course, being opposed to it and Cooley being in favor of it, although you said you'll enforce it. On Arizona, there's a clear distinction. On Proposition 23, there's a clear distinction. In other words, it's pretty—
On Prop 8, there's a clear distinction.
All along the lines, yeah.
On health care reform, there's a distinction.
But here your opponent shows up at UC Davis and brings the family of a slain police officer and is essentially— I mean, to many, it seemed kind of like grandstanding, frankly. Early on in the debate, in fact, he highlighted your differences on the death penalty. I want to get your response to this.
My opponent absolutely, ideologically, opposes the death penalty, which is the law in California. I support it. This particular position of hers was underscored when she refused to pursue the death penalty against the killer, the gang member, the AK-47 wielding gang member who shot down Officer Isaac Espinosa. She declared her opposition to pursuing the death penalty in that case before he was buried.
Well, there it is. You gave your rejoinder. You're ideologically opposed, and yet, like I said, you'll enforce the death penalty. I think this gets deeper, though, into Steve Cooley presenting himself as a tougher prosecutor because he's in favor of the death penalty. That's the image he's purveying to the public. And somehow, maybe even because of the drug lab scandal, you are therefore somehow presented as less tough. Maybe it's also gender. I don't know. I mean, is this resonating for you?
There's no question in my mind that he is using the death penalty issue as a way, as a symbol to suggest that I am soft on crime and he is tough on crime. Let's just deal with the death penalty issue and then move on. I am personally opposed to the death penalty, but I will follow the law. My position on the death penalty is the same as 4 of the last 9 attorneys general of California, including the current one. And under the last 9 attorneys general of California, the work that that office does as it relates to this issue has not changed, and it would not change under me. I said that at the debate yesterday, and I also believe that it is below the dignity of the office we seek to suggest that this campaign and the decisions that voters should make should be based on one issue. Because the fact is that there is nothing that will be different between Steve Cooley and me as it relates to that issue and the function of the Attorney General's office.
There's an appeal to emotion here. This guy should have been killed. I mean, that's really what he's saying to the majority of Californians who do support the death penalty. And somehow, as I say, it makes you seem softer to say, I don't want him killed.
Listen, I will take a back seat to no one in terms of my law enforcement credentials. Straight out of law school, I went to one of the best DA's offices in the country. I have personally prosecuted everything from drug and gang and child molestation and murder cases. I have locked people up who will die in prison. And I have been endorsed in this race by leaders in law enforcement, including the former police chief of Los Angeles, the police chief of San Francisco, the police chief of San Diego, and they have endorsed me because they know that no one would suggest who knows me professionally that I am soft in any way when it comes to ensuring there will be consequence for serious and violent crime. But let's move forward, because truly, if we're going to create public safety and maximize our potential for public safety, we cannot defend a system that has traditionally been reactive. Because it's not working. Look at what's happening in California. On an annual basis, we release 120,000 prisoners because they've served their time. Within 3 years of their release, 70% recidivate, 70% reoffend. It is the highest recidivism rate in the country. And I would suggest what is probably obvious. Any system with a 7 out of 10 failure rate is a system that is begging to be reformed. Moreover, it is extremely expensive, this failure. It is expensive in terms of the fiscal impact to us who live in a state that is on the verge of bankruptcy. It costs us about $25 billion, with a B, dollars a year to address these issues in crime. And it is extremely expensive in terms of our public safety.
Can an AG bring about those kind of reforms that are so necessary and, as you said, so obviously highlightable?
Absolutely. And I think another key issue in this race is who is willing to take on leadership instead of just sit there behind a big desk and react. We have done the work in San Francisco of creating a model reentry initiative. The United States Department of Justice designated our reentry initiative Back on Track is a model for innovation for law enforcement in the United States. I was asked to go back to the White House and present on it. And I will tell you, Michael, our initiative in San Francisco has been replicated across this country. Why? Because we have shown that we can, through a system of predicting who is going to reoffend and then focusing on that population, we have shown that we can reduce their recidivism from 54% to less than 10%. We have also shown that it is not only effective in reducing crime, it is effective in terms of public resources. It costs me $10,000 every time I prosecute a felony. It costs $35,000 a year to house someone in the county jail. It costs $51,000 a year to house someone in the state prison. Our reentry initiative costs less than $5,000 per participant. It just makes sense. I'll tell you another issue. And by the way, because I do see the responsibility of taking these offices to not be to be burdened by the way the job has always been done, but instead to embrace the way it can be done to be more effective. So we have created a reentry initiative in San Francisco, one of the only in a DA's office in the country. We also focused on truancy. Why? Well, I looked at who the homicide victims were in San Francisco who were under the age of 25, and I learned that 94% were high school dropouts. Went over to the school district, asked the superintendent, and learned that over 40% of the chronically and habitually truant students were elementary school students. Elementary school students who were missing 50, 60, up to 80 days of a 180-day school year. So some said, well, why is the DA getting involved in this? Well, because there is a very direct connection between public safety and public education. And I take seriously the oath that I took to concern myself with everything we can do to maximize public safety. Our truancy initiative, over the course of the last 5 years, 4 years, I'm sorry, has increased attendance by 30% for this population. And let's talk about why that should resonate with all Californians. University of California, Santa Barbara did a study published last year. The annual cost to California for truancy is $1 billion, with a B, dollars. If you factor in all of the other associated costs, including the demands on social service, public health, and criminal justice systems, it is upward of $40 billion a year, the cost of truancy.
Well, the cost also needs to be figured in terms of what you're doing preventively. I mean, in terms of not only people who won't be incarcerated because maybe they're not going to be recidivist, but maybe halted from a life of crime on that trajectory that just gets
Absolutely.
Worse and worse. I want to give out the phone number because we've only got a half hour with you, and I want to give listeners
Can I have
an opportunity.
More time? I have a lot to talk about.
So many things
Michael.
I want to talk about with you, and we don't have more time. But let me give the phone number and allow listeners to join us, invite, and in fact encourage. Our toll-free number is available to you now. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us at that number, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. We're talking with Kamala Harris, who is Democratic candidate for Attorney General of California and District Attorney of San Francisco. You can also send us an email. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And let me just say one other thing about the debate yesterday, because Steve Cooley also drew a distinction between you on sanctuary city laws like the one here in San Francisco, in which local government discourages federal authorities from conducting immigration raids. Let's hear this cut.
That we should not be having cities, municipalities such as San Francisco, having sanctuary city laws setting their own immigration policy, oftentimes resulting in harm to their constituents. Just ask the Bologna family, where they lost three individual members of that family to a gun-wielding individual here in this country illegally who evaded deportation because of a sanctuary city policy implemented by my opponent.
You're laughing.
Well, first of all, I did not implement the sanctuary city policy, but let me be clear on that issue. I do not in any way support any law or policy that would shield anyone who has committed a crime, regardless of their immigration status. But let's talk about immigration even more. I also challenged my opponent to renounce his campaign chair and the draconian law that he passed, Pete Wilson, who passed 187, the author of 187, which was one of the most draconian anti-immigrant, anti-family laws we have seen in a generation. I challenged my opponent to renounce it, and he would not.
You also challenged him on Prop 23, and he wouldn't take a position on that. And
that is correct.
You're also, you know, I mean, you have a record which you can be quite proud of going against human trafficking and sex offenses and exploitation of women and children and environmental laws, child assault, domestic violence. But you've been hit pretty hard by your opponent and by others about this drug lab scandal. And
sure, let's discuss it.
It's hurting you.
So San Francisco Police Department drug lab turned
out. Let me just say what happened here. Because some listeners may not know. It was a lab scandal. It was discovered the veteran technician Deborah Madden had stolen and used cocaine held as evidence, and the allegations first surfaced back in December, but the department did not launch a full investigation until last month.
The police department.
Right.
Right. And so what we had essentially is a lab technician who was sniffing what she should have been testing.
Good line.
And, well, it's accurate. And that was obviously a huge problem and an abuse of the system, and it needed to be addressed. Thankfully, we brought in a reform police chief about a year ago who took it on and addressed it. As the chief elected law enforcement officer of the city, although not directly responsible for the police department, I will take responsibility for what happens in law enforcement in the city. And we fixed it. And we fixed it. And so
you're saying it's behind you?
It is.
Because it keeps surfacing, of course, from the Cooley people.
Well, of course, because the Cooley people and my opponent, Steve Cooley, wants to distract voters, frankly, from what are the real issues that are at play. I will take the criticism and the responsibility for what have been mistakes in our system. I'm not running from those. But when I have been presented with an issue, I believe leadership should take on responsibility for it, fix it, and move forward.
Let's move forward to some calls because we've got limited time. I wish we had more, but let's go to Mary as our first caller. Mary, join us with Kamala Harris. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, DA.
Good morning, Mary.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. I have a question. I heard you mention the fact that a lot of the children are dropping out of school, and if they do have a criminal record, they go back in. And you did mention also about the leadership, but that seemed to be one of the problems, the leadership. So what is your plans in working with the leaderships and to, you know, for the school system, because it's just horrible here.
That's right. I mean, and absolutely. First of all, it's about appreciating what you have pointed out, which is that there is a very direct connection between public education and public safety. And, you know, the public health model has told us, and it's been proven and tested, that the best way to deal with, for example, a health epidemic, and I would just insert and substitute health for crime epidemic, is first to deal with prevention. Next, you know, in a health epidemic, if the sniffles take on, let's deal with early intervention. But if we're at the point of dealing with it in the emergency room, it is much too late and far too expensive. So, too, we should think about what we see as clear and cycles that are very evident. And we should do what we can to circumvent those cycles before they start to occur. Because, frankly, what it has resulted in is a revolving door of crime in California, which then causes people to react to what seems to be a problem, which is prison overcrowding and early release of prisoners, as though that's the problem, when, in fact, that's the symptom of the problem. We have a revolving door, and we've got to shut it. It means absolutely, and I say this as a career prosecutor, react swiftly and with certainty. After a crime has occurred, there should be severe consequence when someone commits a crime. But it doesn't mean that that should be to the exclusion of recognizing that being tough is not just about reacting, but also doing what we can to deal with the underlying causes that would result in billions of dollars being spent on a prison system that is overwhelming our state budget. We can save a lot of money and lives by reform of this system around proven solutions. And I'm proud of that. My opponent would stand on status quo. He, in the debate, in fact, Michael, talked about the fact that there's a reduction of crime and the crime statistics have gone down because of increased incarceration. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. The bottom line is that if we're going to save this state, one of the biggest slices of the pie chart of our state budget is the criminal justice system. And it is not working the way we should expect that it can.
You know, you had mentioned before that you have the support of the police chief in Los Angeles, San Diego, and San Francisco. I believe Steve Cooley said in the debate that he has 47 law enforcement organizations behind him, and you have none.
That is not correct. I mean, I have. You want to talk about law enforcement leadership?
Organizations.
Okay. Yeah. The police officer unions. He has the police officer unions. I have the vast majority of some of the leading chiefs in the state who are nationally recognized as leaders around law enforcement in the country. And I'm proud of it. And I would suggest to you, it's a wash. I will not take a back seat to my opponent or anyone on my law enforcement credentials, on my credentials for locking up violent offenders, and for doing the work that I've done for over 20 years of taking seriously the need to make sure that there is serious consequence for in particular serious and violent offenders.
Let me bring some more callers in. We'll go to a caller named David in the city. Hi, David.
Yes, hi, Michael, and all of your guests. I'm specifically interested in hazardous waste. The Attorney General is responsible for lawsuits against polluters, and I don't really see too much action in this front. Just as an example, today in Hungary, there's a massive dam bust, and the local government is claiming that because the economy is more important than the hazardous wastes, they're not going to deal with prosecution. So I'd like to see whether or not California is going to deal with hazardous wastes or coddle the polluters.
That's an excellent point. And it came up again during the debate yesterday and throughout this campaign.
You're not going to tell me we're going to coddle the polluters, are you?
No, it's not a coddling job, my job. But let me just directly answer the question. When I was first elected DA of San Francisco, I created San Francisco's first ever environmental justice unit, recognizing to the caller's point that crimes that are being committed against our environment are as imminent a threat to our health and safety as any other crime we watch on television at night. And we must take that seriously, because the bottom line is we've got babies and seniors who are breathing polluted air, which is resulting in high rates of asthma and other health concerns. And my opponent has refused to take a position on Proposition 23 on November's ballot, which is funded by Texas oil companies, because he suggests that that's not a position that a law enforcement official should concern himself with. That's outrageous. It's outrageous, it's myopic, it's short-sighted, and again,
actually, I would criticize them in a broader way for not taking tough enough positions on environmental restrictions and pending greenhouse gas reduction.
Absolutely right, and he refuses to take a position. And the bottom line is that AB 32 was a law that California passed, a bipartisan law, Governor Schwarzenegger and Democrats, which all realized that we have to have very high standards around restricting greenhouse gas emissions and pollution in our air, in our water. To your caller's point, in terms of hazardous waste disposal, in terms of the toxic substances that are being dropped in our water, it is causing people to have serious health and safety damage. And the Attorney General of the state of California needs to take it on. And I want to work to build on the leadership that Jerry Brown, frankly, led around recognizing the role that the Attorney General of California can play on providing leadership not only for the state, but by extension, the country.
It came as a surprise to some people when you came out against legalization of marijuana and opposed Prop 19.
I am absolutely in favor of Prop 215, medicinal marijuana. I've personally known people who've been very sick who only benefited from its use. We haven't figured out a way to sufficiently regulate that. In some areas of the state, we have more dispensaries than we do Starbucks. And I would suggest that we need to get a handle on that before we do anything else. I am opposed to Proposition 19.
Talking again with Kamala Harris, who is running for the Attorney General of California. And you mentioned before, we've got just seconds left, that you'd like to continue work that Jerry Brown has started. How do you see yourself different than Jerry Brown?
Well, Jerry was elected in a different world. When he was elected, and each of us, when we go through a campaign process, we create our priorities, and hopefully through the process, we talk with a lot of people. We start with a hypothesis, and then we tweak it so that our priorities are reflective of the needs of the people we serve. And at this juncture in our state, I believe that the priorities have to be fixing broken systems and embracing innovation to do that. And so the issue of recidivism, for example, is a very big focus for me, because it is just costing us a lot. And it is now, I think, in this crisis, the opportunity to actually fix it and show what has worked. Environment, it was a priority for Jerry. It's a priority for me. And we can see when we have Texas oil companies waging a full-on assault on our environment that it is absolutely a current concern when we look at what's at play in November. So that is a priority for me. It is a priority for me to take on the issue of mortgage fraud. So now we can see that we're in a climate where there are predators who have come in the form of brokers and financial institutions taking care of people who are living the American dream. Mortgage fraud should be a priority for the next Attorney General. It has been my priority as DA, and it will be going forward.
And she wants to be your next Attorney General. Kamala Harris, running for Attorney General of California. Steve Cooley declined to participate. We'll meet the third-party candidates in the bottom half of the hour. Thank you, Kamala.
We're done?
We're done. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, we're spending this hour looking at the Attorney General's race, that is, in California. And a number of people besides Steve Cooley, who declined to be with us in the last half hour, facing off against the main two opponents. Kamala Harris was here in studio. And now we have a couple of other third-party candidates with us in studio, as well as a couple by phone, and want to find out what they are running in terms of platforms and why they want to be Attorney General. Robert Evans is Peace and Freedom candidate for California Attorney General. He's here with us in studio. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And we've been asking, or we've been actually identifying each candidate in terms of what they do as far as occupation. And maybe we can begin with you in terms
of
what you do.
I'm a criminal defense lawyer and also a housing rights lawyer. You can only put I put criminal defense lawyer on the ballot designation because you couldn't put not enough room to put both. But.
Well, glad to have you here. We also have Peter Allen in studio, Green Party candidate for California Attorney General, and you're also an attorney.
That's correct. I'm an energy and environmental attorney. I currently work for the California Public Utilities Commission.
And with us by phone is the American Independent candidate for California Attorney General, Diane Beal Templin. She's in Escondido this morning. We'll say good morning to you, Diane Beal Templin. Welcome. You're also an attorney, I believe, aren't you?
Good morning, Dan. I believe
I'm Michael. That's okay.
Michael, I'm so sorry. I believe that it's a requirement to run for Attorney General that you have to be an attorney.
What kind of attorney are you, though?
I've done a little bit of criminal law, but I've mostly been doing civil. And for a long time, I did wills and trusts and estate planning and family law. But in the last 2 years, I've been focusing on trying to help people save their homes. So that's been much more predatory loan litigation and, defenses against the banks, I would say, and to help people stay in their homes as long as possible and challenge the fraud.
I also want to introduce Timothy Hannon, who's a Libertarian Party candidate. He's up in Santa Rosa. What kind of law do you practice, Timothy Hannon?
Top of the morning to you, Michael. I practice civil law. Mostly I'm a business lawyer. Incidentally, about two-thirds of the resources of the Attorney General's office are given over to civil rather than criminal matters.
Well, let's find out what each of you stands for and why each of you is running for this office. And Timothy Hannon, I'll begin with you. Libertarians often associated, of course, with limited government. And yet I looked at your platform and you're talking about having education programs in prison to combat higher recidivism, drug treatment programs, job training. This sounds like government in action to me.
Oh, well, I think it's entirely consistent with libertarian principles. The idea there is to bring down the recidivism rate, which is abysmally high. It's about 70% in California, which means that about 70% of offenders, once they're released from prison, are back in prison again within 2 years. And I think the main reason for that is that they don't know how to make an honest living. So while they're in prison, while they're a captive audience, it would behoove us to train them, at least fundamentally, in how to read, write, perhaps partner with private employers to teach them job skills, and those who have drug dependency should get to adequate drug treatment to get them off the stuff.
Well, as long as we're talking about drugs, we spoke with Kamala Harris. She's opposed to the marijuana legislation proposition. You're in favor. Why?
Well, I think there are several good reasons for legalizing marijuana. For one thing, it will greatly help to decongest the jails and prisons. It'll deprive gangs of their main source of revenue. It'll let the police concentrate on hard crime, which they really should be doing. And finally, parenthetically, it will add a new substantial source of tax revenue.
Timothy Hannon, again, is Libertarian Party candidate for California Attorney General. Diane Beal Templin, also with us by phone, is the American Independent candidate. Where are you on marijuana, Diane Beal Templin?
Well, I'm a constitutionalist, so that means that the legislature gets to legislate, and the people get to vote for their legislators. So it's up to the legislature, based on who the people choose, to make that decision. If it's the law, then I'll enforce what the law is. I personally believe that marijuana has a lot of good uses for people who are suffering from all kinds of things. And when I not too long ago had a fractured ankle and didn't want to do drugs or alcohol for pain relief, my doctor said, marijuana, would probably help. I tried it. I don't like it personally. But I guess for many people suffering from all kinds of diseases, including cancer and very other painful things, it's very useful.
Well, and many people like it. It goes without saying. Can I ask you about some things on your platform having to do with crime enforcement? You're talking about reducing crime and making the safe streets, making streets safer and ideally safe, and focusing on violent crime. I didn't get any specific ways that you're going to do this, though, and I'd like to hear some of those, if you would.
Well, again, the Attorney General's job is to make sure that law enforcement enforces the law. And so strict enforcement of the law to particularly, I think that's Californians' major focus, is they want safe streets. They want to be protected. And
but how would you make it more and make for more enforcement than, say, we're having presently or we've had in under previous attorneys general?
Well, you know, just basically by, you know, enforcement.
You mean tougher enforcement, which is to say that the Brown administration has not been enforcing it tough enough?
I'm not, you know, going to like criticize anybody, but you only have like so much time, so much money, so much energy, and so it depends on where people focus. And I've gotten the feeling that in the past, the present administration has focused on, instead of justice, he's involved with the Just Us group, and so he prosecutes what he feels will, you know, benefit his career. So, like, for example, he's gone after attorneys and people who are loan modifiers to go against them instead of allowing people to help the homeowners stop the fraud of the banks. Instead of going after the real source of, you know, the predatory loans, he's gone after the people who are trying to help the people and, you know, really shackled them.
Okay, these are people maybe who can make the streets safer if we can prosecute more of them. I will grant you that. Diane Beal Templin, again, is American Independent candidate for California Attorney General, though that's blue-collar crime you're really addressing. Let me bring Robert Evans into this, who's a Peace and Freedom candidate. And we talk about blue-collar crime or street crime or anything. The solution is socialism? I mean, that's pretty much what your candidacy says.
Well, yes. In the long run, the solution to the crime problem is socialism, because the crime problem in terms of theft, in terms of robbery, in terms of property crimes, stems largely from people who have no other source of income. What we need is an economy, an economic system in which people don't have to turn to crime in order to live.
Forgive me, Mr. Evans, but criminals aren't always poor. In fact, blue-collar crime often takes place among criminals who are
quite
affluent.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I agree. And socialism, with respect to blue-collar crime, socialism is the answer, because we have we need an economic system in which the purpose of economic activity, the purpose of is to serve people's needs rather than to serve private profit. And when we are faced with banks, for example, which rob people through predatory lending, I agree that the banks are guilty of predatory lending, but the solution to end that is to have banks which are not out for a private profit, but to serve the needs of the people and to serve an economy which serves the needs of the people. And the private profit economy does not do that. Only an economy in which which is designed to serve the needs of the people, production for use and not for profit, will solve that problem.
And you also, we should get on the record, support the marijuana legislation, your anti-death penalty. You talk about prosecuting police crime. What do you mean?
What I mean by that is that I believe that we have a large problem in the state of police violence. And as a practical matter, because of the fact that local district attorney's offices depend for their functioning on a friendly relationship with local police departments, they do not prosecute the police violence the way that it should be. They assume that police violence is justified and do not investigate for fear of alienating the local police who have to cooperate with the district attorneys for the district attorneys to do their job. And for that reason, I believe that there should be a special unit within the Attorney General's office which is devoted to investigation and, where appropriate, prosecution of police crime.
And Robert Evans is the Peace and Freedom Party candidate for California Attorney General. He's here in studio. So is Peter Allen, who's the Green Party candidate for California Attorney General. Let's talk about enforcement with you, Peter Allen. And we've had Green Party candidates before with Peace and Freedom Party candidates, and socialism seems to be one of the major differing points. But in a lot of things, you're on the – I mean, you're also opposed to the death penalty. You're in favor of the marijuana initiative. What about tougher enforcement?
Well, I think one of the ways to get more effective enforcement is to make sure that the resources we have, the limited resources that the state has, are actually used effectively. So, for example, on the death penalty, we're spending $20 million or more per year paying lawyers on both sides to litigate for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years whether someone who's already locked up in prison should be executed or not. My feeling is we should be using our resources for criminals who are still out in the street, not the ones who are already locked up in prison. So there's $20 million or more dollars per year that would be available for whether it's social programs or for law enforcement. In addition, you know, I support Proposition 19 for, ironically, very much the same reasons that Mr. Hannon, the Libertarian candidate, said. If we legalize marijuana, there's a lot of things that are now considered crimes that will not be crimes. We can free up police resources that are being used to go after marijuana sellers, marijuana users, to go after violent crime, the crime that people are really concerned about. So I think the best way to get more effective enforcement is to stop wasting resources on kind of pointless activities and devoting those to things that people actually care about, whether it's street crime or white-collar crime.
And again, Peter Allen is Green Party candidate. I'm going to open the phone lines and invite those of you listening to join this conversation with any questions or comments you might have. You're cordially invited to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. And we're talking with four of the third-party candidates running for Attorney General of California. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. I'd like each of the candidates, maybe in just a couple of sentences, to tell us why you're in the race. It seems, if you look at the polls, of course, that you're all overshadowed by the two main candidates, Kamala Harris and Steve Cooley. They have a lot more resources, and the question would be, what do you hope to succeed in by your candidacy? Peter Allen, can I begin with you?
Certainly. You know, I think it's important for the voters to actually have a real choice. You know, the Attorney General does much more than criminal prosecution, and certainly I have a much broader range of experience and a much broader focus than just a career prosecutor. The two major parties have, you know, aren't really offering people a choice, and they've, you know, got us in this current mess we have. So I think having candidates who offer different opinions on the death penalty, on Proposition 19, on protecting the environment, can actually make a difference, and voters should have that ability to choose someone who actually has a different platform than the two major parties.
Can we go to you on the same question, Robert Evans?
Yes. Well, the only thing that is preventing me from being elected Attorney General is a lack of publicity. If people were able to understand the positions that I take and the progress that could be brought to the Attorney General's office by having an attorney general who was in office for the purpose of defending the rights of working class people, for defending constitutional rights, they would elect that Attorney General. I believe, for example, that the Attorney General takes an oath of office to defend the Constitution of the United States, but at the same time, the Attorney General traditionally supports and unconstitutional measures in the court system. The Attorney General shouldn't do that. I believe, along with the Peace and Freedom Party, that the Attorney General should support the right of the people to keep and bear arms for individual and collective defense, including defense against the government, if that should become necessary.
Let me stop you there because I do want to hear from the other two candidates, and we do have limitations where time is concerned. It's just interesting to hear you say if the publicity were there, you feel the people would come aboard. And
that's correct.
Yeah, that's the message, I think. Diane Beall-Templin, let's hear from you on this if we could.
Well, the American Independent Party leaders asked me if I would run, and I agreed because I wanted an opportunity again to give the people a choice to use this as a bully pulpit to talk about the things that are of great concern to me. Our country was based on a constitutional government, and one of the things in our Constitution, like Article 1, Section 8, sets forth all the different things that are to be legislated by the federal government. And if they're not specifically delegated under Article 1, Section 8, then they're to be left to the states and or the people under the 10th Amendment. So one of the things that the federal government talks about is that the federal government is supposed to be able to coin money and fix the standard of weights and measures. And I believe one of the major problems, not only for California, but for America, why we're in this financial devastation, why we have so much of the crime and theft, et cetera, is because back in 1913, we allowed the income tax law to be passed. In 1933, we allowed them to take the gold after we passed the Federal Reserve Act. So we now have a body of people, a corporation with Class A stockholders that are the wealthiest people in the world that own these Class A stockholders, the stock shares, and they are charging us interest on the money that we borrow from them. And if America would stop, would get rid of the Federal Reserve Act and would stop the federal income tax, then we could go back to a constitutional government where we wouldn't be having these trillions and trillions of dollars of debt borrowing money.
Ms. Templin, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we are, again, limited in time. I want to hear what Timothy Hannon has to say, but you certainly made your point about Federal Reserve and income tax, and I know that's a central part of the American Independent Party and what they stand for. Timothy Hannon?
Yes, thank you, Michael. Well, as a Libertarian Party candidate, I would bring to the Office of Attorney General the Libertarian Party principles, namely limited government and maximum individual freedoms, basically the same principles in which this republic was founded. Briefly, the Libertarian Party was formed in the 1980s in response to the fact that both of the major political parties, Democrats and Republicans, came to stand for big government getting bigger, huge deficit spending, expansion of the bureaucracy.
Timothy Hannon, if I may, in the interest of time again, it's important, I know, to sketch out what the Libertarian Party stands for, but I wanted to have you address why you're in this race and why you – is it mainly because you want the Libertarian Party to essentially be recognized and people to find out what the principles of the party are, and that's really why you're in the race?
That's a fair statement. Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And incidentally, I would like to thank you, Michael, and KQED for allowing us third-party candidates to air our views. It's very fair-minded of you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we'll go to our callers. We'll begin, Matthew, with you. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Michael. I have a question really for the panel in general. And, you know, there's a proliferation of gang injunctions that started a few years ago, and they're rapidly spreading throughout Oakland, San Francisco, et cetera. And it seems to me the Attorney General job, something that there's a nexus there, it comes together because it's both a criminal and a civil matter. And, of course, the gang injunctions are civil in nature with criminal consequences. So I just wanted to understand what the panel's views were. Were they Attorney General of the State of California on how they would support or oppose or control these various city attorneys and county attorneys implementing or obtaining gang injunctions?
I think the question is pretty direct. Maybe we could hear a brief response from each of the candidates. Timothy Hannon, let's begin with you.
All right. Well, I think at the root of the gang problem is hopelessness. Most young people who join gangs do so because they feel hopeless and powerless to make it in life on their own. So they turn to the juvenile gangs, which in turn, by the way, are heavily funded by illegal drugs. So I would have... actually, there are already a number of good programs in place. In Los Angeles, for example, former gang members who've seen the light, meet with current gang members and show them that the gang life leads to nowhere. They encourage them toward good jobs and strong family lives. Those are the kinds of programs that I would encourage as Attorney General.
I think I think Diane Beal Templin is on the same page with you, because I noticed Diane Beal Templin, in your platform, you talk about activities for young people working with law enforcement and parents and community and church groups, and this would presumably also be your approach to the kind of problem.
It is. Yeah. Yes, I agree that it's the family structure that is, like, most important. The fatherlessness leads to hopelessness. Children don't have a place. They don't feel loved. They don't know who their father is, and they go to peers to find, you know, some kind of sense of belonging and some kind of purpose. And they get influenced by bad people, and then they rob and steal and kill and do whatever they, you know, have to do to survive.
And let me find out where you are on this, Robert Evans.
There are many things in our society which lead to crime and lead to criminal gang, but the gang injunctions themselves are basically a scam in which the local governments are enabled to deprive young people, mostly young people of color, of fundamental rights without going through the necessity of proving them guilty of crimes, and they are racist to the core, and they are a means of depriving people of rights without the necessity of proving them guilty of crime.
And Peter Allen?
Well, the gang injunctions do raise a lot of difficult issues. I think probably a more effective way to avoid having to use the gang injunctions, if we did take the steps towards ending the war on drugs, like legalizing marijuana, because that would undercut the financial basis for the growth of a lot of these gangs, as well as the attraction, which is money-based in a lot of ways, as well as, you know, identity-based. So I think with legalizing marijuana, passing Prop 19, we can take a lot of steps towards reducing the attractiveness and the power of gangs and avoiding the need for, you know, kind of tricky and difficult practices like the gang injunctions.
We'll go to another caller. And Ari, that's you. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you, Michael, for...
Hello? Okay. You're welcome for whatever. Gregory from Woodside, join us. Hi.
Hi, this is Gregory. I just wanted to see if the candidates have any interest in reforming the current judicial system. It seems like it's a big, fat monster that just keeps sucking people in and arresting for crimes that are basically illegal to be arrested for, but are so petty that they end up costing the society, you know, tons and tons of money and resources. And
well, it's a good, important question. Let me start with you on this, if I may, Peter Allen, reforming the whole behemoth and bureaucratic and labyrinthine and crazed justice system.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in a lot of ways, I don't know that the justice system itself is so much of the problem as more of a legislative process, that you have legislators and then also initiatives who are passing more laws, making things more complicated, putting more things into the courts. And then the courts are trying to deal with these things that the legislature has declared illegal. That combined with all of the civil litigation that's out there, you know, I think in a lot of ways the justice system, the reason it's so unwieldy is because it's so overburdened with what I would agree are things that don't need to be there.
Robert Evans, reforming the justice system?
Well, I usually call it the so-called justice system because there's not very much justice in it. On the criminal side of it, the biggest problem is the horrendous penalties, the unreasonable penalties that stem from things like the three strikes law, which coerce people into giving up their rights to a trial and pleading guilty to crimes they may not have committed and certainly couldn't be proven against them because they run the risk of facing life sentences for petty offenses when they're offered plea bargains of great things like 6 years or 8 years instead of a life term. If we eliminated these unreasonable penalties, we would solve that problem.
Let me jump in here because we've only got a couple minutes left. I want to hear from the other candidates. Diane Beale Templin, if you would.
I'm just reading a book right now. It's called How to Dethrone the Imperial Judiciary. It's by Dr. Edwin Vieira, and he is the president of the National Alliance for Constitutional Money. And it's really, really interesting because it talks about exactly what, you know, we're talking about the importance of restraining runaway activist judges. The judges have just been, like, making up the law. And under our Constitution, they're one branch. They're supposed to enforce the law and only when it's constitutional.
Right. Let me jump in here because we've got only about a minute and a half left. And Timothy Hannon, it's to you for the final word here on reforming the justice system.
Yeah, well, as a practicing lawyer, I can tell you that the judicial system is imperfect. That's for sure. I think we can improve it by educating the public as to the availability of alternatives to dispute resolution, private mediation, private arbitration. Those, I think, work better than the courts, generally speaking, and will decongest the courts and allow the judges to focus more precisely on the details that need to be attended to in order to mete out justice.
Okay, that will bring us to the conclusion here. I want to extend thanks to all of the third-party candidates who were with us this half hour. Wish them the best of luck, and let me tell you who they are again. Timothy Hannon, whom you just heard from, is a Libertarian Party candidate for California Attorney General. He's with us this morning from Santa Rosa, California. And Diane Beale Templin is the American Independent candidate for California Attorney General, with us this morning from Escondido, California. And here in studio, we had Robert J. Evans, the Peace and Freedom Party candidate, and Peter Allen, the Green Party candidate. And I thank you one and all. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We have another hour of forum coming your way. We're here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to extend thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And in the hour ahead, we're going to talk about the Giants, and we're going to also talk briefly with Senator Barbara Boxer. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.